The next case, number 22-1353 and number 22-1447, United States versus Victor Jordan Calderon Zayas. At this time, would counsel for the appellant please introduce himself on the record to begin? Please pull the microphone a little closer.
Sure.
Thank you.
The sentence imposed by the district court is procedurally and substantially unreasonable because it imposed a 14 months upward variance, which is the equivalent of 31% higher than the top of the applicable sentencing guideline. And the explanation for that variance was not adequate. There are mainly three issues that make the sentence unreasonable. The first one is failure to adequately explain the variance. This case is very similar to Rivera Reviews, we'll go to that later. The second is a failure to individualize the sentence, the judge, in reference to community-based factors when they're connected to the offense of the defender. And third, the failure to consider mitigating factors. We will jump right into the first one. Aside from the boilerplate recitation of community-based factors, again, we are connected to the defendant or the offense, and making reference to the gun violence of Puerto Rico, also not connected to the defender or defense. The district court mainly grounded its upward variance on the proper factor already considered by the guidelines. That is the machine gun, and the court made a distinction of the machine gun seats in this case, indicating that it's not an original manufactured machine gun, but a pistol converted to a machine gun, which it's not considered by the guidelines, but that is not correct. When we look at the definition of the machine gun in 226 U.S.C. 5845, machine gun means any weapon which shoots or is designed to shoot or can be readily restored to shoot automatically more than one shot without just by a single pull of the trigger. So by that definition, any firearm that is capable to fire more than one shot by a single pull of the trigger is a machine gun. So the guidance already considered a pistol converted to a machine gun or a military designed machine gun. It's the same for purposes of the guidance.
Do we know that the sentence in commission went to that definition?
Well, that's the definition that included the guidance, and they made reference to the 26 U.S.C. 5845, which is the listing of the. Of the weapons that are considered more dangerous than a regular weapon, which includes machine gun, and that's the definition included there. Also, the district court concludes that the kickback, the modified pistol converted to machine gun, is more dangerous than the original manufactured machine gun, but that conclusion is not supported by any evidence. When we look at that,
was that objected to below, the lack of evidence for that?
Not really, Your Honor. We object as to being procedurally and substantively on the grounds that it is already considered by the guidelines. The sentence did not explain how to get to that conclusion. As a way of explaining, the recoil of a gun is something that can be measured. If that is the basis for the departure, the court should have explained where to get that data from and explain how much of that recoil can affect or make the pistol, or in this case, the converted machine gun, that dangerous. It's not the same a recoil or a kickback from a 22 caliber as to a 50 caliber or a 40 caliber, but we don't know that because the judge didn't indicate how much to measure or the danger is caused by that recoil.
I don't disagree with you, but that specific issue isn't preserved for us, right? Was that?
With that specificity, no.
Okay. There was no objection to that in the record below.
Well, the objection was asked specifically that no. That we are trying to get into because it's one of the factors considered by the court, and I believe that it's also considered in the guidance when we define what machine gun is.
So did you argue plain
error? We actually argue for this discretion when it is. We have to concede that it wasn't objected below, so we have to be plain error.
I thought your main argument on appeal to us was the facts of this case are very similar to the facts of Rivera court. But the thing that was concerning me was this issue with the dangerousness of altered machine guns, which was something that entered into the judge's rationale or his explanation here, and which wasn't really noted and we didn't see and were there various. Am I seeing that distinction correctly, or do you have a way of addressing that?
Well, Your Honor, I agree with your question. Could you begin?
This case seems a little different from Rivera-Berrios because the district court here, the sentencing court, provides a lot of explanation about the dangerousness of this exact weapon here, and that didn't, at least by my reading, that didn't happen in Rivera-Berrios.
Yes, Your Honor, but the thing is the explanation that he makes to support that conclusion, because he's mainly grounding his sentence upon that conclusion, and he's not supported by any
that. Yeah, but that wasn't objected to. That's what Judge Montecarlo was asking you. The fact that it wasn't supported by any data was not raised as an objection below.
No, Your
Honor. So that, can I ask one other way in which this is different than Rivera-Berrios? In this case, we have a prior offense also, correct?
Yes,
plus, plus a prior drug offense as well?
Yes, Your Honor. The only prior that Mr. Calderon has was a prior offense for possessing with intention to distribute more than 500 grams of cocaine. He pled guilty to that, and after that, he only had one prior revocation to that supervised release term, which was a technical violation. It was a positive of marijuana. And he was sentenced to time served by the Honorable Judge Gary Garcia. That's the only violation to the supervised release term that he had. Another thing, Your Honor, is that this is a case of constructive possession. Sure.
He was previously in possession of another firearm being modified, correct?
No, Your Honor. The previous case was only drug case. That was in this house.
Wasn't the revocation he was found possessing another firearm?
No, Your Honor. The revocation that talks about firearms is a revocation for this offense, for the second case. But in the first case, the violation was related to a technical violation to having been positive to marijuana.
I'm sorry.
For drug test.
Oh. But he had a second weapon here.
In this case?
Yes.
Well, Your Honor, that's one of the arguments that we want to make. This is a constructive possession case. Different from Rivera-Berrios.
But that wasn't objected to, right?
No, Your Honor.
Right, so unlike Rivera-Berrios, the things that are different here are we've got a second weapon, a prior drug offense, plus the district court emphasizing the particular dangers of the modified machine gun, none of which was in Rivera-Berrios himself.
Well, Rivera-Berrios, Your Honor, the individual has the loaded weapon. In this case, there's no evidence on the loaded weapon.
The district court didn't, we conclude the district court had not relied on that fact in justifying the variance there.
In what fact, Your Honor?
I'm saying, in Rivera-Berrios, the district court, in issuing the sentence which we thought was not adequately explained, didn't make reference to it being a modified machine gun and it being, in consequence, especially dangerous. Here, the district court did do that. Here, unlike in Rivera-Berrios, there's a prior drug conviction. And here, unlike in Rivera-Berrios, there's a second weapon.
Correct.
So, given those reasons to say this is different than Rivera-Berrios.
As to those effects, yes, but it's also very similar as to the amount of ammunition concealed by the judge, which is another reason that the judge supports his upper variance. This case would have said that the longer or the higher the variance, the higher should be or the longer the explanation.
Was there an objection below to the explanation?
Not specifically as to explanation, but more as those considerations were already factored in the sentence.
That argument was made below.
Yes. And as I was on that, we filed a sentencing memo that made all of those arguments to the judge, and the judge did not mention any of those when posing the sentence, Your Honor. If I may just briefly, Your Honor, as to the mitigating factors, Your Honor, I would like to just discuss that where couple of mitigating factors, as I say, the constructive possession in this case has different from Rivera-Berrios, the guns were unloaded. There was only the defendant was found in a car, but here in the statement of facts and the facts stated when the police were interviewing him, he stated that he didn't know the guns were there, and he even touched the gun. There were no fingerprints of him with the gun, so there's no evidence that he used the guns or had connected the guns with any crime of violence or any violent action. You know.
But didn't he admit that they shared the gun?
He admitted to possess that gun, but when going further into the details, we realize that he's pleading guilty, of course, to avoid a harsh sentence, but he was with other people in the car, and he just recently getting to that car. The car already was there. He was not in possession with his person of the firearm, and they were not there.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, if counsel for the appellee would please introduce herself on the record to begin.
Good morning. I'm going to please support Jeanette Collazo for the United States. This court should affirm the sentences imposed by the district court judge because they were procedurally and substantively reasonable. The district court did not abuse its discretion when it sentenced Calderon to an unworthy violent sentence of 60 months, which is to be reduced to 54 months pursuant to the amendments to the sentencing guideline. And the district court judge has already indicated that he would, in fact, do that reduction to 54 months. So
did he actually reduce the sentence? I was.
In this case, Your Honor, the defendant filed a motion arguing for a reduction to 54 months, which is commensurate with the originally imposed variance. And the government agreed to grant that reduction based on the amendment, and the judge has indicated that it would reduce it. Of course, the case is pending before this court, but I submit to the court that that's an indicative ruling, that if this court affirms the sentence as we believe it should, upon the mandate being issued, the effective sentence would be 54 months and not 60 months. And it should be noted that the agreed upon range was 37 to 46 months, regardless of criminal history category. So that reduced sentence of 54 months is effectively only 8 months more than defendant agreed was reasonable. And in terms of the revocation sentence, it's also reasonable because it's a guideline sentence. And Calderon has not met his high burden to show that there were substantial mitigating reasons that would warrant a downward departure on the revocation sentence. Both sentences were plausible and defensible results based on individual factors about Mr. Calderon and his offense. And at this time, I would like to point to the court that this court has previously affirmed cases with similar facts and more drastic variances. And I would point out at this point, Morales-Negron, where the range was precisely 37 to 46 months. It was also a machine gun case, and the amount of ammunition involved was 57 rounds compared to 54 here. In that case, this court affirmed a 70-month sentence, noting that it has previously upheld similarly sized variance on similar facts, and also point the court to Gonzalez-Flores for the same purpose. In terms of Rivera-Berrios, which has been mentioned by brother counsel, I wanted to point out to several distinguishing facts that court has already, Judge Brown has already pointed to some, but I want to highlight that Rivera-Berrios had no criminal history. This defendant had a prior drug conviction and he was on supervised release. In fact, he was just less than 2 months out from a prior revocation of supervised release where he received no jail time.
Can I ask you one? I take these points, but there's a sentence in the district court's recitation where it's describing the dangers of the modified machine pistol. And then after saying that, it says the guidelines do not account for that. How do we know that?
Well, Your Honor, the guidelines currently in effect have been in effect since approximately 1991.
Yeah.
At that time, the prevalent machine guns were not the same that we're seeing nowadays.
Right. But how do we know that they just unthinkingly have issued the same guideline
because
every year, not accounting for the changes?
Because the specify one way or the other, and to the extent.
So how do we know that that doesn't mean they don't think that's a significant factor?
Well, we don't know that. It's I guess
so
my
so
answer.
So how did the judge know that?
Because the judge incited into itself already under Kimbrough to disagree with the guidelines.
No doubt a judge has authority to disagree with the guideline under Kimbrough if he has a reason for doing it. The reason given here is that the guidelines did not account for this type of weapon. But if we don't know that's true, then that can't be a reason to disagree with the guideline.
Your Honor, the fact is that the guidelines do not differentiate between one and the other.
Right.
And to the extent,
so how do we know that it's not taking account of them?
To the extent that the two are dissimilar and are treated the same under the guidelines, I believe the court reasonably concluded that they were not properly accounted for in the guidelines.
And what do we make of the fact that there's a specific statute, I think, and if I'm wrong about this, please correct me. The guideline is tied to a specific statutory definition of a firearm, which takes account of modification of the firearm being the means by which it becomes a machine gun, correct?
The guidelines make reference to section 5845A, which lists all the types of machine guns.
And one of them is a modified one.
Correct, but that's it's a recitation of all the possible.
Right. So the guideline is picking up, applies to an offense in which the firearm is a 5845 firearm, correct?
Correct.
So the guideline was designed to capture modified weapons.
As it stands, the guidelines applies to modified weapons.
So how do we deduce reasonably that in setting that guideline, the commission must have thought the modified version is the very unusual one?
Well, I cannot speak to what the commission may have thought, but I can point to the court to the fact that the emergence of this type of machine guns is a fairly recent phenomenon, and this district in particular had been at the forefront. Now it is currently expanding into other parts of the country.
The typical, like the one case we've got, Kimbrough, when the judge says, well, I don't agree with the guideline, he has a point of comparison. He sees what the commission assigned for one type of offense, which was much lower than for another kind, right? Crack versus powder. So he knows the commission thinks they're different. Then the judge can say, but I think they're the same, so I can't agree with the guideline. Kimbrough says that's fine, or at least in the special context where the statute was the thing that was defining what the guideline had to be. But here we don't have the similar type of situation. We just have the judge saying, a guideline that on its face covers both types of weapons wasn't accounting for both types of weapons in setting the range. How do we know that? Why is that a reason to say you get to disregard the guideline?
Your Honor, I submit to a court that the two cases are not analogous, because whereas in Kimbrough the guideline did not distinguish,
but the commission had set two different ranges for two different substances. So the judge could say, I don't believe the disparity is justified. But this is a different situation. The commission has set one range for two types of weapons. So the ground has to be, the commission in doing that wasn't thinking that they're the same. If the idea is they shouldn't be grouped together under the same guideline, that may be so. How do we know the guideline is too low rather than too high?
Well, Your Honor, in this case, the disagreement is, I guess, the reverse of what it was in Kimbrough. The court believes that having just the one guideline for these two different types of firearms is not adequate.
Why?
Because
how do we know the guideline is too low, just from the fact that it covers two things that are dissimilar?
Because the judge had been presented through our sentencing memorandum and through his own experience on the bench, which is permissible fact to take into account, as in this court has indicated in Texada, that the sheer amount of machine gun cases that this court sees, on top of the facts that we have presented in our sentencing memorandum.
See what I'm saying? That's a different reason than he gave. What he gave is, the reason I know it's too low
is that it also covers this other type of weapon. How is that an explanation for it being known to be two, and another type of weapon? And then he says, and the commission didn't account for how dangerous that other type of weapon is. And I just don't see how he can know that.
I believe it's a reasonable inference to say that the commission did not account for it because they're being treated the same. And the court, with the evidence that he has evaluated, including because the expert that testified in Polanco Hands, which we cited to in our sentencing memorandum in this case, indicated how these modified machine guns are so much harder to control, even for an expert.
Harder to control
than they're marketed
to your expert. The question that you're not answering is, what is the reasonable inference to believe that the sentencing commission did not know that and take that into consideration when it allowed the guideline range that has been in place for a while to remain in effect, given that they review it and renew it every year?
Again, I would have to say that it's the fact that they have not modified it.
But they might think it's fine.
They might think it's fine, but the district court judge is entitled to disagree with that.
But then he has to say the reason I'm disagreeing isn't because they didn't take account of it. It's because they did take account of it. And even though they took account of it, I think they're wrong. Then that would be a true Kimbrough objection. This is a contention that they didn't account for it. That's why I'm disregarding it. But if that premise isn't defensible, that can't be a reason to disregard a guideline.
Yeah, Your Honor, what the court said is that the guidelines do not account for the fact that this is not a manufactured machine.
But what is the record evidentiary support for that statement? That's what we're trying to figure out.
Well, I submit to a court that that's a reasonable inference from the fact that the guidelines don't distinguish between one or the other. So by not distinguishing between one or the other, which according to the facts presented to the judge and and his own experience, he knows one to be more dangerous than the other. So by not distinguishing, in his reasonable opinion is that they do not account for that.
Yeah, we had a case yesterday where there was a chip that doesn't do anything except modify. So on its own, it doesn't do anything, except it still has the same level of culpability in terms of sentencing that an altered machine gun does. And so is it reasonable to say that that is too high because a chip by itself doesn't do anything? I mean, the question is, the factual basis for the court making that determination is just elusive.
Yeah, in this case, there was a completed machine gun, and there was also another firearm, and there was also ammunition, and there were also other aggravated factors. So I take your point, but I feel the two situations are not comparable in terms of the guideline that would apply to them. Again, that's another reason why the court could have thought that the guideline is not appropriate in being so encompassing, because it covers the chip alone.
Let me ask it this way. Suppose I found an application note for some legislative history that showed the commission had taken account of it. I'd have to vacate then, right?
I would submit no, Your Honor, because the judge would still have the authority to disagree with the guideline and the Kimbrough.
And the basis then would be what?
That even if it was considered, the judge believes it was not adequately considered to the extent of the dangerousness of this particular machine gun, and in this case.
And are you saying that in effect, that's what the judge was saying here?
That is our understanding, Your Honor, but it was not limited to that.
I understand, but with respect to this point, what you're asking us to do is read the district court not to be saying what he said, which is that the commission didn't take account of this, but to say that they didn't give sufficient weight to how dangerous this is. Given how dangerous I'm telling you this is, that can't be the range for this weapon. That's how you want us to read it.
But Where Your Honor, the district court words were that it did not agree with the Sentencing Commission policy in establishing guideline ranges for particular offenses, especially in firearms cases, especially machine gun cases, and that's right after the court discussed modified machine guns.
Yeah, but the key point is that in the modified, he says that the Sentencing Commission doesn't account for this. I'm trying to understand what the district court meant. You're suggesting what we read it to mean is it didn't account for how dangerous this is, so any guideline that it set is too low if you're talking about this kind of weapon, because I think it had to be higher. That's how you're saying we should read it.
I understand that was part of the reasoning, but again, I want to point out
I understand, I get the other fact.
There are very specific individual aggravating factors in this case that also justify the variance imposed.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I just have one more question. So, we hear the mantra all the time that the guidelines don't take into effect the dangerousness of the weapon. Does the U.S. Attorney's Office go into court and argue that? In other words, does the U.S. Attorney's Office adopt that same position with respect to how the guidelines reflect the dangerousness or lack thereof?
We have a case by case. Argue for upward variances in this type of scenario. I cannot respond to that more specifically, and I also can point out to the court that the Department of Justice as a whole has requested amendments to the guidelines in terms specifically to machine gun conversion devices and whether the definition of firearm as opposed to a firearm within Section 5845 encompasses the definition of machine gun conversion devices as a recognition of the emerging problem that these are representing across the country.
So when was that in the first place?
I don't have the date in front of me. I can find it to the court.
Relatively recently, or is it an old request?
It's relatively recently.
Is this with respect to the in connection with enhancement?
It's related to, but it's specifically in regards to the definition of firearm. That would apply, for example, if a person possesses more than one machine gun conversion device. And so whether that enhancement for multiple conversion devices would apply.
That wouldn't relate to this guideline in particular.
It would not relate to this guideline in particular, but it does recognize the increased problem and dangerousness of these type of devices.
Thank you.
If there are no more questions, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. At this time, counsel for the appellant, please reintroduce yourself on the record. You have a 2-minute rebuttal.
Steve Arce on behalf of the appellant. Your Honor, one of the things that the even though the validity of the circumstances in this case, which were considered during the bargaining of the plea, the government concedes that it should have been a guiding sentence. Therefore, agree to a 7-month sentence, which is the top end of the applicable guidance. They did not request for a variance. They agreed to enter into a plea agreement. If they would have considered that this is a case of the mind run, they would not plead the case. However, when they get into a plea agreement and in patient level of sentencing memorandum, they indicate that after considering all the circumstances in this case, we believe that a sentence of 46 months is a good sentence, just sentence. So even the government believes that 45 sentence within the guideline should be the guideline applicable in this case. Another thing, Your Honor, is that the list that 26 U.S.C. 5845 includes more dangerous weapons than machine gun. When you look at that list, we're talking about disruptive devices, bazookas, grenades, grenade launchers. So in that list of destructive weapons, the machine gun is a less dangerous weapon, even though it still gets the enhancement for a dangerous weapon. So I submit that to the court. And what has seen, Your Honor, in King Road, like the court mentioned, it was a police agreement that was based on a well-documented, non-criticized disparity. And the court explained in detail why is that distinction, where in this case, the court did not, Your Honor.
But you didn't make that argument below.
We did not, Your Honor.
Are you also challenging the imposition of the revocation sentence here?
How is that done?
Are you also challenging the imposition of the revocation sentence here?
Well, we didn't in the brief. We actually right now believe that it has to be revoked. We were included as the consolidated brief because we wanted the court to see that it was too harsh. We objected as substantively and procedurally unreasonable because we believe that this case, the revocation case, belonged to Josh A. Garcia. And this and the Sosa requested the docket, the case to his docket, to impose sentence. So he knew that it was going to be a harsh sentence. So that's why we objected, because he already imposed a 14 months variance, and then also imposed the top end of the guidance. It's a guidance sentence. It considers it has to be revoked, the supervised release, but when you combine those sentences, it's going to be a sentence greater than this. I mean, that's what's happening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes argument in this case.